to GalacticConnection.com, one of the most popular blogs on the World Wide Web today for alternative news. Stay tuned for the latest information on our world shift from enslavement to galactic involvement, as well as current intel on any blockages impeding us from our sovereign birthright. Knowledge and self-mastery are key at this time. Our commitment is to present you with the latest breaking conspiratorial articles, off-world messages, exopolitics, cutting-edge technologies and sciences, and also an ever-significant intertwining of spiritual support and metaphysical scope that one needs to dive down the rabbit hole and search for truth with balance. We are truly on the horizon of a new golden age filled with the promise for more love, worldwide peace, and accelerated intuitive skills, where every living being can exist in cohesion and abundance. It is whatever we envision and dream this new world to be. I say to you now, let's redefine the new world to the beginnings of our own precious heaven on Earth. Galactic Connection is here to provide the pulse of Mother Earth through an eclectic range of interviews each Tuesday afternoon from 3 to 4:55 p.m., Pacific Standard Time, Station 2 on BBS Radio, expanding your perspectives on how we can once and for all take back our freedoms, our joy, and our connection with our mighty I Am presence. Our intention remains true to connect hearts and minds everywhere in order to obtain global unity and galactic and universal acceptance. Our discussions will continue to cover anything to do with galactic society and our involvement with our galactic brothers and sisters. Our guests are experts in their fields, and our radio shows have been coined as some of the most thought-provoking out there. In addition to our daily blog, which runs 365 days a year, we also offer a realm of healing services such as our world-renowned implant removal processes, our spiritual past life clearings, our galactic violet ray alchemy from Alexandra, who shares in the lineage of Merlin, and other cutting-edge healing technologies. Check our site out at galacticconnection.com now. Sending you a wave of light, love, and inspiration, and a personal hug and thank you for listening to our Galactic Connection radio show and visiting our blog today. Hello, everyone. This is Alexander Metters of GalacticConnection.com, and this is an on-the-fly interview with Kevin Annette for the date of October 26th, 2016. And of course, many of you already know Kevin Annette and his background, but just to remind you, he does have a background in community ministry, human rights consultant. He also is the special advisor to the ITCCS, which stands for International Tribunal into Crimes of Church and State. And he has already been nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize in 2013, 2014, 2015. And have you already been nominated this year, Kevin?
Not yet, but I was a recipient of the Prague Peace Award last month, so I wasn't able to go and get it, but I don't know, for whatever that's worth.
Cool. Yeah, well, hey, you're getting acknowledgement for something, right? And just for those of you that are new to Kevin, basically, he was working as a minister of St. Andrew's United Church in Port Alberni in 1995 and got fired without any cause. And boy, did that start a crusade within himself that has absolutely blown away those that know him and love him. Kevin is a very outright and major speaker and advocate for trying to bring the exposure of child sacrifice and satanic ritual and also the Aboriginal children, especially in Canada. He's done such a massive amount of investigation. So we have a lot of interesting information that he has set forth today. And I think to just get started, Kevin, I wanted to bring up a couple of news headlines that came out today. So are you cool with that?
I am very cool.
Okay.
Always cool. You have to be in this line of work.
So first of all, thank you for coming on this morning. And for all of you out there who haven't heard a lot of Kevin's
Talks Chats. He does have a phenomenal radio show on Sundays. And please try and catch that if you want to dive into this a little bit more. It really is a difficult topic. I get that. I get emails about it. But it's also the root. It is the absolute root of the virus on this planet. It is so important for us to understand the, I'm going to say, ill logic behind it. And he has really uncovered some amazing information as of late regarding legal documents. I'm just blown away. So first of all, before we get started, I just read that the Vatican ordered all cremated bodies to be stopped, that they cannot be scattered. And they're titling it pantheism. So I wanted to see what your take was on that. Why would they be doing it? Why would that be such a big deal to them?
Well, the first thing that came to mind, I hadn't heard that, but you know, there's something that flashed in my mind as soon as you said that. And it had to do with similar kind of strange statements that came out of the Vatican over the last few years about, you know, the astronomy, astronomical observatory they have where they're looking for Nibiru and they're looking for extraterrestrials and that. And there's a faction in the Vatican that believes that the second coming is about to occur, but not in the way that it says in the Bible where Christ returns. They believe another entity is going to come to the earth of some kind. They don't say what or who that is. And in their dogma, when that happens, all of the dead are going to be resurrected, so you don't want to burn them up. Right. So it could be that faction within the Vatican, a very conservative, traditional faction. There was a guy, Cardinal Lefebvre in France, who actually was quite notorious. He had a lot of political ties with the National Front, that neo-Nazi group in France that wants to deport anybody who isn't white from the country. Cardinal Lefebvre was trying to reinstitute the traditional Catholic Mass, the Latin Mass and all that. And he was the one really pushing for this, that, you know, that faction around Ratzinger and others who were very traditionalist and versus the more, you know, whatever you want to call it, around Bergoglio, where they're trying to put on a more liberal image. So I think it could, you know, could reflect that. I'm not quite sure, though.
I'm also wondering if, I know that when you cremate the body, you're actually freeing the soul from the physical vessel. You know, you're cutting all those cords, apparently. And I also have heard that if you bury the body, then in many cases, the soul gets trapped.
Well, you know, to take the more look at the more shadow aspect of this, definitely I believe that the Vatican and what it represents is deeply involved, not only through the Ninth Circle, but other means of energy vampirism. It's inherent right within the Catholic Mass, within their whole ideology of original sin, the guilt and shame they impose on their adherents. It could, again, be more of the same, because when you think of the effect of that, it's to create a whole climate of fear and intimidation among people. And they ramp that up periodically, you know, especially when there's a crisis of some kind in the Vatican to distract attention. So, I mean, it could be all of the above, you know.
That's true. Well, and there's so much information about the staging of a fake alien invasion. And right. I mean, the Vatican is completely behind that, right?
Yeah, no, one of the things on the ground happening we know is that for a number of years, the Chinese have been buying up the debt of the Vatican Bank in the same way they're buying up the U.S. debt. So, I mean, they control half the American debt now, the Chinese, which is probably why Obama's so cushioning up to the Chinese government. But the same thing's happening in Vatican City. So what they're doing with that debt, what they're doing with the Vatican Bank money, who knows? But every pope is the hand puppet up there distracting everybody from the real garbage going on. So, you know, again, that's happening as we speak.
That's crazy. Well, another article was talking about the Venezuelan father, Arturo Sosa, who has become the new head of the Jesuit order. I figured you'd had something to comment on.
Wait a minute. Now that name strikes a bell and I'm trying to, do you remember there was, and don't quote me, but I think he's related to, there was a Dominican cardinal.
I thought so too.
Who was tried for, with, you know, in-house trial within the Catholic Church, which simply means he's pensioned off somewhere. never does any time, but he was deeply involved in child trafficking in the Dominican Republic. And of course, that part of the Caribbean is notoriously intense when it comes to child trafficking because of all the natural disasters, the great poverty in that. And he was exposed, and the Sosa, I believe, was connected to him. But I'll have to do some research and let you know about that. But again, you know, those are the kind of people who rise up to the top of the Jesuits and the Roman Catholic Church, both, really.
Well, and they're talking about the tragedies that are going on down in Venezuela and the intense poverty and, you know, just social upheaval. So I thought there has to be some backdoor agreement or something with this Venezuela father.
Also, just another thing on the Jesuits, don't forget he's been coming in now because, for people who don't remember this, Adolfo Pichon was the former head of the Jesuits. He was named as a defendant in our second common law court case in 2014. He was found 2 weeks after the case began. He announced his resignation at the upcoming Congress. No Jesuit leader had ever done that before, any more than any pope had ever resigned during peacetime, the way Ratzinger did after our just before our first court case verdict was coming down that found him guilty of child trafficking and so on. So you can rest assured that this new Jesuit leader is part of the old boys club. And that means he's going to cover up all of these crimes, and that's why he's put in there.
Yeah, I was wondering too, you know, with all the WikiLeaks information that's still siphoning out to the public, there has to be some nuggets coming out in a big way regarding the Vatican. You know, I just feel like it's about any time. Just seems like it's happening any time. Well, okay, now this was interesting. The Pope is now saying that he's going to pardon 8 bishops in China who were considered illegitimate. What do you think about that?
Oh, right. Well, okay, now what that's connected, I mentioned the Chinese buying up the Vatican debt. For the first time in history, the Vatican officially recognized the state-established Catholic Church in China. Before that, they said, no, the official Catholic Church is just a puppet of Beijing. We recognize the underground Catholic Church. Well, Bergoglio did a butt-face and suddenly recognized the state-sponsored Catholic Church because he's getting in bed with the Chinese. He's like the Vatican has always done historically. They play both sides of the game. So they're supporting the West. They're supporting the East. They're in with the BRICS alliance. They're in with the West. I mean, that's their job to be in all, have their fingers in all the pies.
Sure.
And that whole reinstatement, I've got to do research on who those people are, but undoubtedly he's trying to mend fences with the Beijing government. And that's one of the ways to do it, right? He's playing the game.
You know, the thing I keep thinking about is China is really holding a really good deck of cards.
Oh yeah.
And especially on a financial level, they have so much power and they've been doing it very slowly and methodically and behind the scenes for such a long time. And I can't help but think that this is all part of bringing down the Vatican, because I do feel that there are people within the Chinese, I'm going to say even the government, but also some of the families, the dragon families, for example, some of them, and some of the other factions that we don't even know about that are really working towards peace and harmony on the planet. So
I think the Vatican is bringing itself down. It's an empty shell. That was when I did my first exorcism there in 2009, I was alarmed at how empty the place felt. I mean, it's really on every level, it's just it's a big masquerade. And so I think, you know, we have to look past the appearance in all these things, as you do as we kind of approach it from a whole spiritual or higher perspective on this stuff. Then, you know, it's the old game playing itself out. But at the same time, like you say, there is a fundamental shift happening, and it has to do with, you know, I would say etherically, the end of this dark regime, whatever you want to call it. People have different names for that, but I see it all over.
It's true. The Matrix is dismantling as we speak. It's being uncreated as we speak. I mean, that's really what's happening, which is what we've been wanting, especially the enlightened community. They're all focusing on that, hopefully. Now, here's a biggie, and this came out today, which I just thought was fascinating. Cardinal George Pell, one of the most powerful figures in the Vatican, has been interviewed by Rome, in Rome, by Australian police over a series of sexual assault allegations, but no charges have been laid. Police in the state of Victoria confirmed that the three detectives traveled to Rome last week to interview him. The assaults allegedly occurred in 1976, 1980, 1996, all the way through 2001.
Yep.
And he's, of course, denying it, but I thought it was interesting because the Vatican's finance chief has repeatedly denied. Now, remember, guys, Cardinal Pell is the Vatican's finance chief. I just thought that was fascinating. Has repeatedly denied the allegations, has agreed to be interviewed. He has threatened legal action against those, quote, promoting these accusations. So what do you think?
Okay, well, here's some of the background of that. Cardinal Pell, he was the cardinal for Australia. He was part of the faction in the Vatican that supported Ratzinger. He doesn't like Bergoglio. And if he doesn't like Bergoglio, it means he may not like the whole orientation, pro-China orientation, that Bergoglio is following. So is he being set up to be taken out for that reason? I think the Vatican might be just torpedoing him. Now, of course, in their own mind, and according to the governments of the world, they're a law unto themselves. So it doesn't matter if he's murdered somebody. The police will not go into their Vatican jurisdiction. And I mean, Ratzinger's been sitting in there for years, a convicted criminal. The guy who murdered John Paul I has been sat in there for Bishop Marcinkus from America, sat in the Vatican for 25 years, and the U.S. State Department couldn't extradite him because they wouldn't, right? I mean, anyone could walk into the Vatican now and arrest these people. It's just, it's part of the fiction of these sovereign jurisdictions, they call them, right? That nothing can touch them. It's like, it reminds me of that in anthropology, I was studying in the old kingdoms of Hawaii. The high kings of Hawaii had no power at all. They didn't own any land. They had no army, nothing. But because they were so powerless, they had to create this image of absolute authority. So if their shadow fell on somebody, that person had to die. If their shadow fell on a house, it had to be torn down. They were deified because they actually had no power. And whenever I think of that, it reminds me of the Vatican, because in no sense at all do they have any authority or power, especially now after they're a convicted criminal body under international law. But they have to keep maintaining this fiction that, oh, well, we can't arrest them. They're the church. You know, it's part of that whole mythology that keeps, you know, powerless people in power, if you like.
Yeah, right. Now, I thought about you when I read this, Kevin, because of the conversations you and I have had about exorcism. Mm-hmm. Okay, get this. In the United States, over the past 10 years, the number of official priest exorcists has more than quadrupled from 12 to 50. It says the rite of exorcism is a Roman Catholic healing ministry traditionally shrouded in secrecy. Whether a diocese even has an official exorcist is the sole decision of its bishop. And what they're doing now is, it says there are two America's most active exorcists, Father Gary Thomas. Not sure if you're familiar with him. He wrote a book called The Rite, The Making of a Modern Exorcist. And it says here he's struggling with the demand to keep up with it. And I just was curious, why is this such a secret? In my opinion, there are demons all over the place, and there's demons.
Starting in Rome.
Exactly. So, what's their logic behind all this?
Well, you know, it's the old story of physician heal thyself. I mean, how can you operate within such a murderous, blood-soaked institution and purport to be able to conduct spiritual cleansing ceremonies on people possessed? I mean, the saying in the Bible, Satan cannot drive out Satan. Right. And I think it's for show. Like, I've participated in, besides the thing in Rome I did, I've been participated in two exorcisms. And the reality is that it's not the result of the action of the exorcist that the expulsion occurs. It's through the grace of God. It's through the spiritual intervention of this great force of love and deity. And we're just channels for that. Now, the problem with the Catholic belief system is that they think everything happens through the priest. They think that this guy in a robe is able to transform a wafer into the literal body of Christ, right? I mean, it's superstition. It's not based on anything real. And so all their talk about exorcism, I mean, it's for the consumption of their own people. It's not anything real, because the exorcism I took part in Port Alberni in 1993, there was a Catholic priest present, but he admitted that he hadn't done anything. He said, I can't admit this to the bishop because the official dogma is that, you know, but this happened for a lot of reasons, also because we had six or seven of us there present in a prayer circle, calling on the higher light, calling on God and the power of Christ to expel this demon from this woman. And it happened. And I know it was a reality because we were all wounded in the process of that. And that's something, I remember talking to a fellow who was a genuine exorcist. He wasn't a Catholic or anything. He said, a genuine exorcist can maybe do it two or three times in their life because it takes something from us each time. It leaves a mark on us. You encounter another reality and you go on their radar screen. It's kind of like in Lord of the Rings where, you know, he puts on the ring and suddenly the eye of Mordor can see him. Mm. That's the reality when you confront these powers at that level, that you're on their radar screen and you're targeted, which explains some of the reasons of why these things have been happening to me, because I've been pulling back the church mask behind which this entity hides. And traditionally it's hid most effectively in religion, organized religion. And at the same time, I've had a lot of power or protection around me in the course of that. So in a way you could say everything I've been doing for 20 years is like an extended exorcism. But I'm not doing it. There's a higher power. I mean, my human effort is helping to do it, but there's a higher power working through me. And that's how I think we need to look at this whole question of exorcism. You know,
I was just speaking with a fellow healer the other day, and we were talking about this subject, you know, about people that have possessions and attachments, and they're very, very stubborn, difficult. You know, maybe they've gone to one healer after another. They still can't get this thing, you know, off of their field or themselves or what have you. And, you know, his comment was, well, that's the old way of doing things, is to feel that you have to combat or confront, you know, an evil entity. And you don't have to do it that way. But with exorcism, you're definitely doing that, which leads me to think, knowing what the Vatican's involved in, is this also perhaps a way of that individual that's performing the exorcisms to almost acquire and attain right. that evil spirit within themselves to build their own?
Well, the native people in Vancouver call it soul sucking. They say within the healing circles, for example, on the West Coast, this was common. I met two of these guys who practice dark medicine, and they use the healing circles as a way to grab people's souls. I mean, that's how they see it.
Yeah.
I don't think souls can be grabbed. I think there's a psychological factor where the person either wants to or believes it can be. Our soul is part of the eternal reality, and it's not something that can be controlled by human beings. But nevertheless, psychologically, you can acquire, okay, we don't have to, I always said, whatever you do, don't start debating religion, right? It causes too many divisions. But anyway, I could be wrong, of course. But the thing I was going to say about the process of exorcism I found is that there's really three stages, and it's like, you're right, the entity doesn't actually have power. It's actually nothing. There's nothing there. But you, in the course of the first stage of exorcism, you compel the entity to name itself, or you name it. And, in doing so, it loses its power and authority. And, the second stage is expulsion. And the third is replacement with the actual substance of the person or, you know, all of that. So we did that outside the Vatican. In October 2009, when we held the first exorcism, we called out the spirit of corruption and murder within the Vatican. And the next day, the tornado hit the center of Rome. And the second day after the exorcism, the first stories broke in the European media about Joseph Ratzinger's involvement in covering up child abuse. So the crime was named. After that, when you look at everything that's happened in the last number of 7 years since that, the Vatican has been collapsing in terms of its legitimacy, its integrity, and it's worked. I mean, we don't have to do anything now. It evil tends to collapse in on itself. We just have to stand in the light, and the main thing we have to do is withdraw our energy from any of these systems that are using our energy to feed off, and that's what the corporatocracy in the world, the church, anything, it feeds off our energy. We have to withdraw that energy, and that's our main weapon.
I agree. And I just had to crack up because, in this one paragraph, it says, in lengthy interviews with the Telegraph, the two exorcists discuss how the increase in drug and pornography addiction, failure of the mental health care system, and a rise in popularity of pagan activities, such as using a Ouija board to summon the dead, are among the factors contributing to the huge increase in demand for the rite.
Well, it's funny that they should mention that, because the Vatican is one of the chief shareholders in several of the largest online porn companies. Not only the arms industry and Monsanto and GMOs and that, but the Vatican and small arms companies like Beretta. But the Vatican, we found out through a researcher in Florida who used to work for the FBI that there were two internet porn companies that were owned exclusively by the Vatican. Now, when this guy went public with it, he got targeted in the way I did. He got evicted. His marriage broke up. The whole thing. And the Bishop of St. Augustine tried to get this guy into court. So, I mean, they're feeding off all of this stuff, right? But it's like the town child rapist always is the most outspoken against child rape, right? You have to kind of protect your image, protect your dirt.
That's crazy. Well, now I want to go on to just a lot of the information you've been putting out recently. And I was just pretty blown away by some of the documentation that you found. And I thought if we could go through that, you know, just to review it. I mean, I know you started with actually finding a document that listed all the people that were involved. I don't know if anybody can see this. It's kind of scribbly. But this is all going to be available underneath the YouTube, screen. But can you talk a little bit about the core and people that are involved? I mean, this is a lot.
That's a smoking gun document we found. It's up online. It's in Murder by Decree, the Crime of Genocide in Canada. You can get through Amazon or murderbydecree.com. It's a document that the Catholic, Anglican, and the churches that became the United Church, they all signed it. It was a contract by which the Indian, so-called Indian residential schools were run. And when you look at that contract, it basically is the legal framework for genocide, because it says the government and the churches have the authority to do whatever they want to Native children. And that was the thing that enabled over 65,000 children to die in less than a century, and a lot more that we don't know of. So that's a very key document.
And that's only in Canada, right?
Yeah, I mean, you have to multiply that by many times in America or other countries, you know. Same system was at work.
And it's dating all the way back to 1910. It's in black and white. I mean, I beg to enclose a memorandum of information releasing to Indian boarding schools and draft. I mean, so people, make sure you check this out. It's just great to see what has been found in black and white. Now, your next one, which I think you should go over, is about George V.
Right, that's the law. That's the law that created the Indian residential schools. It's again, the key document which allowed the government to legally kill children and the churches. You see, it created a whole jurisdiction where the churches could do whatever they wanted on the grounds. They had been given all this land by the crown to build whatever they wanted on, to grab the resources the local residential school principal was usually a priest, a doctor. He had the power of a magistrate. He could convene courts to try Indians in imprisonment if they wouldn't send their kids into the Indian schools.
notate here that if they didn't follow this, then anybody who was a guardian of that child would be arrested.
Right. So parents could, under that law in 1920, any Native parent would go to jail if they didn't release their child to the guardianship of the principal. You see, guardianship was transferred to the principal of the residential schools by the government. And when I released the document showing that, that's what started all the lawsuits in Canada. That's why the churches hate me so much, because the government, the document I gave to the lawyers for the natives back in 1996 showed that the churches were the legal guardians of these kids under the law. So how could they pretend that they weren't responsible for all the harm that happened?
Unbelievable. Now, what about the, it says, an act respecting sexual sterilization?
Right.
Okay, so everybody, here it is. I know that's, it's a little difficult, but you'll be able to pull this up.
That's a British Columbia law. It actually came in the same month that Hitler passed the same law in Germany. It allowed...
I wonder how that happened.
Well, we know there were German doctors before and after the war working in Indian hospitals experimentally on children. That's a whole other thing we opened up. But that sterilization law was much broader than the laws in America. There's a good book called War Against the Weak, America's Plan to Create a Master Race by Edwin Black. And it showed how the eugenics movement started in America among the medical community and spread to Europe. There was a lot of ties between the Nazis and the eugenics movement in America, the Rockefeller Foundation, et cetera. That document went further. Like in America, the so-called feeble-minded could be sterilized. So if you had a substandard IQ, there were 38 states which allowed them to be sterilized, right? But in Canada, it wasn't just the mentally underdeveloped people. It was natives, because Indians were considered to have an inherently lower IQ because they were lower on the evolutionary scale. Therefore, they had the intelligence of like an 8-year-old, and therefore, under the law, they could be sterilized because they were substandard IQ. If you were an unwed mother and had a child out of wedlock, you were morally suspect, and so you could be sterilized. They went after Métis or mixed blood white Indian offspring. Political dissidents were considered targets for sterilization. Criminals, it was believed that anyone who committed a crime incessantly, it didn't happen because you were poor or something. It happened because you were mentally criminal. Your mind was different, and so you shouldn't be allowed to propagate. I mean, it went on and on in Canada, much further than what you find in America.
So, you know, if we took it a step further, they're basically just trying to stop the DNA, right?
Yeah, and that's the sure definition on point 4 in the Genocide Convention. International law says that attempting to prevent births or in any way is one of the surest signs of an intent to commit genocide. And these sterilization laws, it was applied en masse by the churches. They had special hospitals, 4 on the West Coast alone, because that's where the biggest group of unassimilated Indians was concentrated, run by the United Catholic and Anglican churches. The Catholics were big into sterilization, despite their, quote, pro-life stand, which is BS, because the main reason the Catholics are pro-life is because of their heavy involvement in the child trafficking trade, and they don't want to cut into their profits through abortions. You know, they want to traffic these babies, and they do at a young age. So, and that isn't a cynical attitude. That's been proven time and again that they are involved in these things. A lot of this is in Murder by Decree. People should go over that thoroughly. A lot of the evidence is in there.
Yeah, it's an amazing book, by the way, everybody. It has so much detail. Now, this document was appalling. This is showing a schematic on the number of children, father, mother, how many children, how many are living, how many are dead, and it's per school. So on this particular school alone, 50%, right? 50% of the children died.
That's CE, means Church of England. So that's the Anglican school on the Blood Reserve. That's in Alberta. 1907 is from what's called the Bryce Report. Dr. Peter Bryce was the head medical officer of Indian Affairs, and he was kind of like me. He was this naive person in the system saying, hey, I should go and try to do some good. And then he wrote back this report saying, I can't figure this out. All the children there's half the children dying every year, and they're being, the sick are being deliberately housed with the healthy, and they're never being treated. And this is happening in every school, and then they're covering it all up. The answer of the government was to fire this guy and blacklist him so he could never get a job in the civil service again. He wrote a book about it. I reprinted it in Murder by Decree. It's a little pamphlet called A National Crime. But he was buried the way I've been in the popular consciousness. You know, people don't even know who Peter Bryce was. But he showed in his report this massive death rate. And guess what? It didn't just start in 1907. It was present the very first year the first school opened in the West in 1891. Boom, 50% dead. Now, TB is a gradually occurring disease. It doesn't kill off half the kids right away unless you're deliberately causing it. And you look at the death rate on the reservations back then, it was about 5%. You put the kids in the Indian schools, and it's 50%. Oh, so these were killing machines, and those charts prove it.
Oh, my God. And then you have the story of national crime, record of the health conditions of Indians of Canada from 1904. To 1923.
Yeah, that's the Bryce report I just mentioned. That's okay. that's the little book he wrote.
That's the book I'm talking about.
Describing what happened.
Yeah, it looks like I thought it was interesting his background because he used to be a medical inspector of immigrants, and then they pulled him off of that, and he began a systematic collection of health stats of several Indians. And then he went further into setting up like the health department for the Indians.
Right. And that's, I found debates in the Canadian Parliament about that. And somebody asked, well, since when are we concerned about the health of Indians? And Arthur Meehan, who was a prime minister in 1920, when that book was published, he stood up and he actually said in Parliament, I have the transcript, when we formed the health department, there was no provision made to include Indians under its jurisdiction. In other words, we don't care if they die off. In fact, we hope they die off because we've been making sure they die off through deliberate the smallpox wars and all that, which, again, is described in Murder by Decree. So, no, it's been a deliberate policy all along, and that's why the Canadian government now is putting such a huge effort into making it seem like we've made amends, we've apologized. We want to, you know, do better now by the natives, when in fact the death rate is as high as it ever was. You know, and the natives continue forced off their land by big companies in British Columbia with the government collusion, the courts. I mean, again, we talk about this regularly on Radio Free Canada, Sundays at 3 p.m. Pacific.
Right on. Yeah, check out his radio show. And then you also have, it says here, a blueprint for criminal conspiracy. Crimen solicitationis.
Yeah, it's in Latin.
The Vatican policy regarding the concealment of child rape and trafficking within the Roman Catholic Church. And that is this article here.
That got leaked 10 years ago to the London Observer from a Vatican librarian. And it shows in there that ever since 1929, the official policy in the Vatican is when a child is raped or harmed in any way by a Catholic priest, everyone is silenced. You do not tell the police. You silence the victim. And if you talk about it, you're excommunicated. So you go to hell for doing the right thing, because obviously God doesn't like a snitch, right? God wants child rape to be covered up, according to the Catholic Church. So that what's really interesting about that policy is it came in the same year the Vatican Bank was created by Mussolini in 1929, because Mussolini created the Vatican as a state, at least, you know, under their law. It isn't actually, but it's this fiction people maintain. And they created this policy at the same time. So what, because of that policy, a lot of these crimes that we're describing in the Indian schools could go on. Two-thirds of the schools were Catholic schools. You bring in a policy that says it doesn't matter if you rape a native child, it'll all be silenced. And at that point, the same year, the Canadian government hands over guardianship to the churches. You put two and two together. Once the churches could guarantee that any rape of a child would be concealed officially by their own policy, the government said, okay, good, now you can be the guardian. All of this shows a whole intent to wipe out native people. You just have to put the puzzle pieces together, right?
And an entire network around that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, the government in their archives broke up all the pieces so nobody could put them together. And I've spent years putting them all together, and it's in Murder by Decree. So you got to take the time to do it. But then it's very clear how this was deliberate genocide, and it's still happening as we speak.
Now, Kevin, do you have access to this document right now, by the way?
It's right in here.
Okay. It's on the line. Do you know where it is in your book? Because it's just hard for me to read this page.
It's in one of the appendices. I'll look it up for you right now.
Because I would like you to read the first chapter. I mean, not the first chapter. Sorry about that. The first paragraph. Just so people get a feeling of how they wrote this. I was blown away. Did you find it? Okay, cool. Can you read that? It's under number one.
You want number one? So don't forget, this is described as a pontifical secret. That means it's coming right from the Pope's office. So the buck stops with the Pope. The Pope endorses this policy. As a matter of fact, Bergoglio, the great liberal, has said he endorses this policy. The crime of solicitation takes place when a priest tempts a penitent, however that person is, either in the act of sacramental confession, whether before or immediately afterwards.
And they call him a penitent.
Yeah, well, that's their word for any member of the church, because it's assumed you're full of sin and have to go to the priest to be forgiven, right? It's a great way to keep people in a state of shame and fear all the time, you know.
Totally.
The key point is in paragraph 11. Let me read this.
Well, I wanted you, before you jump there, just the part where they're actually describing what they consider to be, they don't say inappropriate, but they go into the object of this temptation. Do you see that part? It's like,
well, that, yeah, the whole attitude is somebody is tempting the priest. A child is tempting the priest.
That's what I wanted you to read.
So in other words, the child is to blame. You see, they're full of sin and they're causing this devout man to fall. You know, it's their same sick attitude about women who are full of evil and are trying to tempt men all the time. It also covers animals. This covers bestiality. So I assume the priest is also somehow being tempted by a dog or a sheep. I mean, these people are really twisted, right?
but just read that one sentence, please.
Which one? Paragraph
one. Right after the object of temptation. I mean, people need to hear this. You know, just wherever it starts.
The crime of solicitation takes place when a priest tempts a penitent, whoever that person is, either in the act of sacramental confession, whether on the occasion or the pretext of confession, whether even outside the times for confession, other than that designated for the hearing of confessions. The object of this temptation is to solicit or provoke the penitent towards impure and obscene matters. Now, it's assuming here that the priest can also be a penitent, you see, because he goes to his higher up. So it really is a way to say, cover everybody. It goes on and on. I mean, the thing is, this is a very special kind of coded language as well. You got to remember. But I want to emphasize.
Well, I just thought the whether by words or signs or nods of the head.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, it can be assumed. Oh, yeah, I haven't reached that part yet. But it's assumed that anything could. It's like in the Inquisition. The person is assumed to be guilty, even if they don't know they're guilty. And it says, even a nod of the head or a touch or anything could be construed to mean that you're tempting somebody. So you're, you know, clearly guilty, even if they want you to be guilty. In paragraph 11, it says, each and everyone pertaining to this matter is to observe the strictest secret, which is commonly regarded as the secret of the holy office. That means the Pope.
Oh.
In all matters and with all persons, under the penalty of excommunication. And it repeats that in paragraph 13, the oath of keeping the secret must be given in these cases by everyone, by the accusers or those denouncing. So in other words, you're going to go to hell if you talk about the rape of a child, either if the child talks about it or if the priest talks about it. So in other words, they say raping a child isn't a crime, it's a sin. What the crime is to talk about it. It's like in the mafia, they've got the law of omerta. You might have seen that in The Godfather. You don't rat out somebody else or you're popped. Well, it's the same way, and it's probably taken from the Catholic Church since the mob are all good Catholics. you don't talk. That's the biggest crime, to talk about these crimes. It's not doing it that's the problem. It's to squeal about it. Now, that's set up by a system that operates systemically in the abuse of children, because you can't allow one person to rat out anyone else. Everyone's got to stay quiet, and everyone's got to believe that it's not really a crime to rape a child, which they believe. I remember it wasn't George Pell, but it was some top cardinal when he was in trial in Philadelphia. Oh, it was Lynn, Monsignor Lynn, who went to trial in Philadelphia. He said, I genuinely didn't believe that raping a child was a crime.
Oh, that's right. I remember you and I talking about that.
Excuse me?
Yeah, it's like, hello?
That's what I mean. These people are very sweet. They're sick. They need help, you know.
Where did you get that one from? Well, and then you have the International Human Rights Association of American Minorities, and you put together a panel to come up with a verdict about guilty or innocence of the church, government, and the political officials in the reported deaths and torture of Native children at the residential schools. And so you can actually see that one.
That's the year that happened in June of 1998. And I'm kind of reemphasizing that now because it was the only independent inquiry that ever found these before our common law court case that ever found these churches, the Catholic, Anglican, United churches guilty of clear acts of genocide. And that was never reported anywhere in Connecticut. There's been such a cover up of this. It's mind boggling. It's a whole story in itself, how effectively they've concealed this crime and shut up everybody who knows about it.
Crazy. And then just refresh everybody's memory about the association, you know, because just you putting all this together was just amazing. The Association of Bergoglio promised the top spot in the Argentine church, and then Queen Elizabeth and her peace with Pope Benedict about concealing child rape.
Right. Well, that's coming up more to date. About things that have happened. Jorge Bergoglio, the present Pope Francis, so-called, went from being a lowly priest in Buenos Aires to the head of the whole church in about 13 years. Unprecedented. That's never happened before. Because he was good buddies with the military junta that was killing off thousands of Argentines, including his own priests. There's a famous, infamous picture of Bergoglio walking arm in arm with one of the generals of the junta. And they killed over 30,000 people. Now, what Bergoglio did that won him the position of head of the church, he set up a whole system of trafficking the children of people in jail, political prisoners, just like they did in Spain under the Franco dictatorship. So they must have trafficked thousands of these children out of their homes. They don't even know who their parents were. I've met some of these survivors in Barcelona when I went there once. And Bergoglio did that. He made the Catholic Church tens of millions of dollars just by doing this. And he was rewarded by the church and so on. Now, the same thing went on when, if you remember back in 2010, the Pope visited England. As a matter of fact, I was part of a huge protest there. There's over 20,000 of us protesting the Pope's visit. It was fantastic.
I can't imagine 20,000 people.
Oh my God. It was amazing. Like, awesome. It was so funny. They expected the humanists and the atheists called this protest, and they expected 500 people to show up. The word got out and 20,000 people show up, and the police, I remember there were so many of us walking through Trafalgar Square. We just pushed aside the police barriers and the police were helpless. There was just so many of us. It shows you the power of numbers and people's unity, right?
That's awesome.
And it was funny because Ratzinger was holding a mass in London at the same time, and there were so few people who showed up, they had to bus in kids from Catholic schools all over England, and the stands were still only half empty, right? So it was really hilarious. But at that same time, 2 days later, he went up to Edinburgh, and he met with Elizabeth Windsor, a.k.a. Queen Elizabeth, and they signed what's called the Holyrood Agreement, which established the terms by which the Church of England would reincorporate into the Church of Rome. Now, that's an act of treason. That should get her bounced out of her office right there, because she took a coronation oath to uphold the Protestant faith in England, not to re-enter the Catholic Church. And one of the conditions that the Vatican had was that the Anglican Church had to agree to come under the policy of crimen solicitanus. So now Anglican priests have to protect child rapists as well. Those are all criminal acts. You know, and so that's one of the reasons that they were found guilty of crimes against humanity during our first common law court trial in in 2013, which compelled his resignation.
This is wild. Now, talk to us a little bit about Holyrood Castle in Edinburgh and how that is affiliated with Hollywood, because you know they have to have a connection, because they're both like two huge, you know, child reign, yeah, right?
Definitely. Holyrood was the name of a church actually near Edinburgh originally, but it was also a scene of traditional child sacrificial rites going back to the time of the Picts and the Romans. A lot of these are Roman rituals. Even the dates when these sacrificial rites happen tend to be Roman in origin. And Holyrood is the big, the Queen's residence in Edinburgh. And it's also a place where our eyewitnesses, Toos Nienhuis and Anne-Marie van Blijenburg, two Dutch women who were used in the Ninth Circle ritual, they were members, their families were members of this cult. They were taken to Holyrood Castle on a number of occasions as children and teenagers and took part in sacrificial rituals where children were raped and killed, their throats slit, drank their blood, dismembered and ate their bodies, and then dumped their remains through this kind of cistern that went down into the in the basement. She gives a long description of that on our itccs.org site. But
you interviewed her, didn't you?
Both of them.
Yeah.
Oh, it's very extensive. And Holyrood Castle, Carnarvon Castle in Wales. And if you look at the latest posting today on itccs.org, it's about our upcoming show on Radio Free Canada. And there's a picture there of Marie Reine de Mont Cathedral in Montreal. Mary, Queen of the World, is the name in French. And it's the main cathedral. In the basement there, they do routinely child sacrificial rituals, and you know, from sources there and other documents we found. So these things are ongoing. That's the point. I should say now, people want to listen to that show, you go to bbsradio.com/radiofreecanada, K-A-N-A-T-A. It's every Sunday at 3 p.m. Pacific. So I really urge people to tune in this Sunday to listen to that program and the others that are archived there.
That's crazy. So Hollywood, how does this fit into Holyrood?
I'm not sure the direct connection, but it's interesting that
gotta have a direction.
Yeah, we should look into that. Hollywood, of course, is one of the centers of child trafficking and these sacrificial rituals as well. And you know, it would be interesting to find that link. You know, I'm sure there is one.
I thought I'd bring that up to you. And now you did say Papa Francis was determined to keep the Holyrood deal secret at whatever cost because of his own reform image and plans to entrench Crimin even more completely in church law, which he did on July 11th, apostolic letter stating the Vatican source.
That's Francis, that's Bergoglio. What he did soon after he came into power is he said that he formalized the fact that from now on, any report of child rape within the Catholic Church would be dealt with by church courts. Now, he spun it in a way that made it seem like, oh, good, they're gonna be answerable now under the law. But no, they're answerable under church law, which means, like I said, it's not an offense to rape a child. It's a sin. The person's forgiven. They're put on pension. And then things carry on like before. It's a way to conceal a crime more. And the churches are notorious for that they operate in-house, their own in-house legal system.
Just the crimen solicitationis, yeah, whatever. That is such an eye-opener to read that. I really highly recommend everybody read that, because you're really getting a gist of how they're making the child, no matter what their age, to be the actual criminal. Just by a nod of their head, or they touch the priest, or they give him a kiss on the cheek, very innocently. This is all par for them, right, to be able to say, well, hey, you know, we're the victims here.
It's an abomination. It's so nauseating, yeah, and people can't just sit by and let this happen. That's why a whole part of what we do now is to train people in the common law, direct action, stop these people, right?
Yes, definitely. Now, you also put together a whole bunch more information, you know, not only the exhibits that you put together, but you also put together the memorandum on the disappearance and the torture, exploitation, and murder of women and children on the West Coast. And you were talking a little bit about how there, I mean, you just have a step-by-step procedure of what's going down. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because it sounds like you've gotten quite a few of the key pieces as to who is ultimately involved. It's almost as if you've exposed, you know, it's almost as if you could look at a chart now.
Yeah.
Because of the amount of evidence that is compiling.
It's one of the appendices in Murder by Decree, the whole report you describe. Now, what's interesting, just to give some background, soon after they came to power, the Liberal government in Canada under Justin Trudeau, the nice-looking spin doctor who we have as prime minister now, one of the first things he announced was a government inquiry into the missing women on the west coast of Canada. That happened soon after we had released this, because in here we go into detail how it's the government and the RCMP, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, that are making the children go missing. So the government comes back immediately with their own inquiry, which, like the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, conceals more than it reveals. And it's set up to do that. It's to hide the evidence, silence the witnesses, and make it seem like they're looking into something. And so it was a direct response to the publication of Murder by Decree and the evidence that came out in this thing you're describing. That report shows that there's a whole network, especially operating in the West Coast, because it's tied into the Trans-Pacific human trafficking, organ trafficking, snuff film industry that operates out of China, the Philippines, Thailand, Vancouver, Seattle. There's a whole hub where this goes on. And it names the names of the Vancouver police, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. It's you've got to read it for yourself. But one of the amazing things it shows is the very Crown prosecutors, they're like the district attorney, the name for a DA in Canada, the Crown Counsel are called, appointed by the party in power, so there's no neutrality. The amazing thing is the police don't have the power in Canada to lay charges. It's the Crown Counsel, which is an appointee of the party in power. So this is an old colonial device they use. That's why you guys had a revolution to chuck out the Crown Law, because yeah, the courts were the tool of the Crown. They could nail, you see, with the Crown Counsel system, if a criminal charge is coming up against a friend of the government, they can squash the charges. They can bring charges against political enemies. It's a great system to have the elite rule that way, use the courts to do that. What happened, this is amazing, there were charges brought against this guy, Willie Picton, who was a lone gunman, serial killer, who's now in jail. They're blaming him for the death of all these women in Vancouver. Willie Picton was just the body disposal guy. He never actually killed anybody, but there were charges brought against him, and they were quashed. They were stopped by the Crown Council, two Crown Councils in Vancouver. Mm. From our research, we found out that these same Crown Councils actually owned the land on which these killings were occurring. Mm. So, I mean, there's this whole insider's network going on where these people are profiting on the one hand, and then they're pretending to prosecute on the other, right? It's like, I don't know, if you ever see L.A. Confidential, that film about, you know, how the L.A. police are operating the drug trafficking in the 1950s and knocking off the mobsters who are their competitors, it's exactly what's going on, you know, all over.
Except the commerce is trafficking children, living right. beings, living innocent, beautiful beings.
That's right.
Unbelievable. And so now, not only have you exposed that this law through the Vatican is applicable to the Anglican Church, Presbyterian Church, what else?
Well, they all, the churches all have an Methodist? Unofficial policy of doing that.
Okay. So all churches, I mean, what churches are not affected by that, have not bought into that?
Well, I don't think any that I've ever encountered, including, we're not just talking Christian churches, we're talking under Judaism and Islam as well. We've documented the same kind of practices going on of, protecting, not just protecting the individual child rapist, which is how it's always spun, but it's a whole network. Like when William Lynn was tried and convicted in Philadelphia 3 years ago, the prosecutor showed that 25% of all the priests in his diocese, these are hundreds of priests, were directly involved in trafficking children. The other 75% under the criminal law are obligated to protect them. So when Pope Francis says, oh, only 3% of priests are raping children, no, 100% are, because when you're protecting the person doing it under the law, it's called an accessory. and you're just as guilty under the law as the person doing the crime, right? They know that. They're just trying to fool people, right?
So they're just manipulating words.
They are. Well, that's what lawyers do. That's
but you know, the other thing is, it's just my, it's like the coroners are involved, the judges are involved, the doctors are involved, the clergymen are involved, all the popes and all of those officials are involved. It's one big massive network that is presented overtly as the Vatican, the Catholic Church.
How could it carry on for centuries unless it was that way?
True. And it's, you know, it's right, like, out in front of you, you know, unless you take the time to research it.
Well, it's like one of the, I remember once in a healing circle, a woman, Harriet Nahani, got up, and she had made the news because she had witnessed the murder of a little girl being kicked down a flight of stairs. But Harriet said, well, these people don't believe in heaven or hell, because if they believed in hell, would they murder children? Would they rape children? Like, it's that simple. You can know them, judge them by the fruits of their actions. What they are, right?
Right, right. That's very true. And I think another good point is the network is so extensive that not only do they have the actual players and performers and instigators, but they have those that are going to cover them and watch their back, which is the police, the RCMP, right? That's how you say it. You know, the military. You've even discovered that the military are getting involved to protect them.
Well, that's why we say to people, you don't have to go along with the system. Under natural law, you were, and even under international law, the Nuremberg precedents in 1950 at the UN said, no soldier, no civil servant is obligated to obey an order which causes the death or suffering of another person. So, I mean, in theory, the law is on our side, but in practice, if you're somebody like me and you speak out, you know what happens. You get the boot come down and you're so quick, you can't even recover from their point of view. And that's what happens in practice. That's actually why I wrote this book. Another one of my books this year was The Whistleblower's Manual, Truth Teller's Shield. You can also get that through Amazon. And it's kind of a how to survive these attacks when you're going to go up against the system. And I had a lot of fun writing that, actually, because drawing from my own experience, all the mistakes I made and urging people not to make the same mistake when you go up against a big institution, right? Or any wrongdoing.
You've learned the hard way. You know what? Put that book back up there, because I haven't even seen that book. Are you going to send me one?
I sure will.
I would love to see that. And
it's called Truth Teller's Shield, A Manual for Whistleblowers and Hellraisers.
And I love it. And I love the insignia in the middle.
Amazon.com or createspace.com, you can get it. But I'll send you one, Alexander, for sure.
This is great for all those Knights Templars, Sisters of the Rose, high priestesses out there who are ready to kick some butt and, you know, take some action on a physical level, bringing down some of these institutions. So I noticed that a lot of the interviews that you're doing as of late, you're really following, you know, a line of exposure and also just, you know, I would say documentation that's been coming forth about the disappearance of women. And now, can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, that's the in response to the government latest cover-up about this. We really intensified our efforts out on the West Coast with our sources and activists out there to really bring this issue out now. The last number of shows on Radio Free Canada have been focusing on that. Like, for example, we interviewed a guy called Merv Ritchie, who's a journalist in northern British Columbia, who was shut down. His newspaper was shut down by the Catholic Church. The Knights of Columbus went around and canceled all his advertising because he began to show how the Catholics were involved heavily in child trafficking in the north,
wow,
northern BC. In the next shows in November, we're going to have a woman called Sandra Fecht, who's one of the two counselors in Canada who deal with satanic ritual abuse. And they face a lot of opposition within the counseling and psychiatric communities. They refuse to recognize SRA as a category for therapy and treatment. They deny the existence of satanic ritual abuse. So she's facing this uphill battle, but she has some amazing insights into energetically what this really is all about. And she has that spiritual perspective, not just a clinical approach.
Can you share just a couple of them?
Well, I mean, one of the things she's found just as a counselor is that the men and women she deals with all go through the same process of recognizing that they were being used energetically. They were actually being programmed. Her belief is that there's off-planet entities that use us.
Totally agree.
To monitor and to be used, and also to monitor this dimension. And she's kind of chronicling how satanic ritual abuse is one facet of that.
Yes.
One of the guys, I've had both of them on my shows. One guy I had on my show, Dave Staffen, was a survivor of a satanic ritual family in Southern Ontario. And guess what? As a child, he was taken to the Indian residential school, the Mohawk school, where we did that dig, where we uncovered the bones and the buttons. And he said, yeah, I saw children being taken out regularly and they never came back. So there's a lot of overlap in all of these crimes, you know.
Big time. So anything else new going on? Anything else that you want to talk about?
Well, too much to mention, actually. I mean, we could go on for hours, but the focus in Canada is definitely on the whole missing persons thing and what's behind it, really. That's going to be the topic of this Sunday, like I mentioned. In the States, and we found that, you know, of course, there's all this distraction, the Hillary Trump distraction going on, of course.
Yes. But
we've had an increasing number of calls from people. Again, the big issue we get, people wanting to set up common law courts around the disappearance of their children. We get so much of that. And this is right within the system of so-called child protection. CPS, maybe, I think they call it in California, Child Protection Services. Mm-hmm. You know, like, for example, I had a long discussion with a social worker on the Gila Indian Reservation. That's G-I-L-A. People should look that up. There's more children going missing off that reservation than anywhere in America. And this counselor has documented the police are involved, the travel. Well, because they're Indians. They can go missing. Nobody cares about them.
But why that one in particular? What is it about them?
Okay, well, here's the thing. In the Kivas, which were their traditional underground places they live. These have been sites of child sacrificial rituals, and it's just down the road from that Vatican Observatory.
Oh. Remember,
they have that observatory, and there's this. So energetically, there's something very strange going on there. And we think that the sacrifice of the Anasazi and the Apache and the Navajo children is part of that. So that's one of the kind of things we're trying to focus on more. Sorry about the phone there.
It's okay.
And that's anyway. So the we're getting a spike in the number of requests of people in America to try to do something about all the children going missing more and more now.
Are you finding that the parents or guardians of these children, are they starting to realize that it's not just some whoops, somebody on the side of the street was a flasher, or they nabbed the kid off the playground and it was just some, you know, guy on his own that was perverted? Are they starting to really get that there's this full blown out and out war zone to take the children away from people?
More and more people are waking up to that. Like, I spoke in Sacramento last year. Was it earlier this year? I can't keep track. But there's a good woman there, Connie. She has a group called CPPA, which is mothers who have lost their children. They hold regular rallies in Washington. They try to make this an issue. But the thing is, there's such massive indifference at the official level to all of this because they're all so involved. Within the government system, the social workers and police will identify vulnerable women, like single women on low income or something, criminalize them, and then take their kids, and you won't see the kids again. They make a lot of money. We find in Canada, for example, in Ontario, it's called the equivalent agency is CAS, Child Advocacy Service, Children's Aid Society. I'm sorry, it's called CAS, Children's Aid Society. And they get $100,000 for every child they traffic from a family into a foster home. And they're a private offshore company. They're an agency posing as a government operation. The same thing. There's a huge market in trafficking children into foster homes. And why would a foster parent get $1,000 a month and a woman on welfare only $500 a month to raise the child? You know, the whole system is slanted towards destroying the family, destroying the natural bond between women and children. That's what they did in the residential schools. It's the tool of genocide that's aimed at all of us now.
And of course, attacking the divine goddess right in front of our eyes.
Right.
You know? So classic. So what about any update on the, the triad, the Hong Kong triad? I remember us talking a little bit about them on the last radio show that we did a while back. And any of the Italian mafia groups, are there any updates on what's going on with them? Has there been any progress in exposure or?
Well, they're both a constant actor in this because the drug trafficking and the human trafficking are like that. They're just one and the same. For example, we find HSBC Bank. You know, you see at airports all these HSBC logos everywhere. They were tried and convicted by the U.S. government. They paid a $1 billion fine because they were caught trafficking or laundering money for the Mexican drug cartels. All the major banks do this. Now, when they're laundering money for the drug cartels, they're also laundering it for the human traffickers. There's over 25 million plus people today being trafficked. It's a human slave trade. A lot of those are women and children. And the same mules that bring them in and out of the country, they're also bringing the drugs and everything. So there's a lot of overlap in these crimes. The triad, the 'Ndrangheta in Europe, the mafia there, they provide the children for these ninth circle rituals. They're heavily involved with the Catholic Church. There's no point talking about organized crime anymore because it's totally part of the same corporate system and government system. The private prison system, okay? There's been this huge strike going on in America in 25 states. And they're challenging. They're saying the 13th Amendment allows legal slavery in America. Slavery was never abolished in America. It was transferred into prisons. And so they're fighting the whole system. And we've had reports of that on Radio Free Canada and that. But these are really exciting times because people are waking up. They're seeing the bigger picture now.
Yeah. And, you know, the more people wake up, the more we have the numbers behind us.
Yeah.
You know, we have the support as a unity.
People got to be bold now. They got to move out. And I'm especially wanting to get in and speak in high schools and colleges because you find this generation is a lot more aware. There's a pro and con with the younger people now. They're instantly aware of stuff because of the internet, but they're so flooded with information that they don't know how to pick and choose and they don't know how to take action together. Like I find that's a whole other topic. I won't preach about right now, but they're young minds that are very open, put it that way, and they need leadership. We need to say, you know, that's why I wrote these books, to show, look, there's hard lessons we need to share with you about how to take on what you're dealing with, because the biggest problem people have is they're naive. They don't understand the extent of what they're up against. They think they're going to write to the congressman, you know, or find a good judge somewhere to give them justice. It doesn't happen because it's all...
Because they're all part of it. They're all part of it. Well, and you've also, you know, everything is about the children at this point, seriously. You know, everything, even from an energetic and spiritual perspective, is trying to free up the children from the constant barrage of frequencies that are being, that are bombarding them. I mean, it's bombarding us, but there is an all and out focused agenda towards the children, especially because they're so caught up in the digital age. They're very much involved in their cell phones, their computers, their notepads, all that stuff. They're just, you know, whereas we can literally at our age remember what it was like to climb trees and
before computers even, you know.
I'm so glad that I had that kind of upbringing.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That ability to experience nature. This is the biggie, is the parents need to get their children out with nature,
right,
back in touching base with nature. It's so important.
That's the best healing that we can do. I don't like the word healing because it's used politically all the time, but the best way to restore and to transform ourselves is to be in touch in that way. And I'm saying now to people, like I remember a while ago, last year, I spoke at a conference pretty young people, they're in their early 20s, and it was a college crowd, and they're all looking at their devices, and I say, okay, before I go further, I want you to turn them all off.
You must have seen a face like, whoop.
Well, no, they couldn't. I mean, they're so caught up. And the frightening thing is watching on a bus, somebody will finish with their iPad, and then they cling it to themselves like it's part of them, right? there's something going on we don't quite understand about that. And I will not allow this generation to be turned into a component of a bloody machine somewhere, right?
Because that's what they're working on right now. And in fact, they've already proven, Kevin, just to respond to that, they've already proven that not only the frequency that's being put out by the cell phones, okay, but also there is an artificial intelligence being used as an addiction type tool.
Right.
Okay.
Because
even those of us in our age bracket, you can get like to a point where, you've got your smartphone, they call it smartphone, you're texting people and you have to literally say, you know what, I'm just going to put that down. I don't need to hold that all day. I don't need to check my tech. I mean, when are we going to go back to the days when things did not fall apart for us to be constantly stimulated by our eyes and our ears via cell phone?
That's the problem, because when you're in a constant state of stimulation, you can't imagine, you can't remember, you can't dream. And that's where the higher energy comes in is those human creative aspects that are lost. I mean, watching young people, they don't know how to listen anymore. Their attention is blip, 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 and it's all analytical. It's that part of the brain. Now, don't forget, that's the part of the brain that can be most easily controlled.
True.
And no accident that you plug everybody into one source of information and one frequency, and you're basically a component at that point. And that's the biggest revolution we need to bring about, is disestablishing that.
Yeah, and parents out there, oh my gosh, please be very, very aware that the children are getting hit up even in the schools. How cool it is to get a chip that gives them all the information of who they are. They don't have to carry any kind of device anymore. They can become the device. And once they become the device, guess what happens next?
The cyborgs.
We're talking 1984 and beyond.
Yeah, we're talking about the Borgs. We have become the Borg at that point.
Totally.
Yeah.
Big time. So.
Well, we won't let that happen.
No, we're not. And you know what? We're making a lot of progress. And I just got more intel this morning. I mean, we're just having one victory after another. I said this at the conference I was at last weekend with Tulloch, that there are so many obstacles that are being removed minute by minute by minute of each day. I receive intel from light workers, star seeds, whatever you want to call yourself, guardians, archon hunters. I receive intel all the time around the world, and people are telling me what they're doing. And it is phenomenal. I really want to take my hat off, which I don't have on right now, to all of those that are doing their work. They're doing their bit. We're all in this to bring this down.
Right.
And we're at the end of the road here, where we're literally getting real close to experiencing that and how we're going to cruise through that experience.
And then what we're going to build.
Yes.
And
that's what we're all waiting for, is how to build what we've been envisioning in our minds for so long.
Yep, we'll start on many levels, but that's why we like to emphasize the common law, the personal reclamation, because you can't do any of this unless you reclaim your own mind and heart and soul first.
And Kevin and I, a while back, we started to go into common law very, very thoroughly. I highly recommend you access that interview. By the way, I just wanted to ask you, I've been up on your website, your interviews are not working. Did they hack your site again?
KevinAnna.com.
No, I went to your ITCCS.org.
The interviews aren't working. I didn't know that. I'll check it out today.
Yeah. So, I mean, your site's just like mine, okay? So you need to be checking this all the time.
Can I just announce some of the websites and the...
Please. Go for it.
Okay. Well, again, the show is every Sunday, 3 p.m. Pacific, bbsradio.com/radiofreecanada. hiddenfromhistory1@gmail.com is my contact info, and itccs.org, tribunal website, murderbydecree.com are the two main websites. And please get the books too, Amazon. Well, there's three I'm going to flag: Manual for Whistleblowers, Murder by Decree, also found at murderbydecree.com, and Unrelenting, this is my personal story.
That's a really funny story. You've got some funny stuff in there. Now, I want everyone to really think about this. This is a subject that so many of us don't want to talk about. We don't want to face it. We don't want to hear about it. We're like, oh yeah, you know, it's just Kevin and Ant, and he's just like talking about the kids that got murdered, whatever. I hear that from some of my emails. But what I'm trying to say to you is, even Murder by Decree, it's an excellent compilation of information for all of you out there that are really passionate about taking down something. I'm getting more and more emails about people that are really wanting to step up in very particular aspects, like GMO foods, okay, or vaccinations, or sterilization of animals, or, you know, whatever. It's a really good book to show you all the types of testimonials that he compiled to base and, you know, produce evidence, and also to support his desires of bringing down these networks. So I think it's really well worth your read. It's a good reference material book, in my opinion, Kevin. So,
yeah, thank you.
You're welcome. So anyway, thank you again, as usual. And I'm going to thank you for the world, because I know that it's people like you and me. I mean, it is not an easy thing to do what you're doing. And
well, it's our purpose karmically.
Yeah, it is definitely our purpose. And it can be very challenging, but I just want to acknowledge the work that you've done. And I know what you've gone through in some areas of your life. It's not been easy. And I want to just share the love that so many people have for you, Kevin, because you don't hear it enough. So
I don't seem to hear it, period.
I know. So we love you. There's
all right. No, well, thank you.
There's a lot of, I'm going to say light warriors, even though people rag on that term, but there's a lot of people out there that realize we're still not out of this. What I'm going to say is this lack of balance between darkness and light within this reality, period. We're still trying to bring that balance back to a neutral state. And Kevin is definitely one of those people. So thank you.
Thanks, Alexander. Thank you.
You're welcome. So take care. Yeah, you too. And take care, and sending everybody lots of love and blessings. Hope you have a great weekend coming up shortly, and we'll talk to you the next time. Stay tuned. And oh, one other thing. We have the coolest process coming out. It's called the Divine Blueprint Reset. Okay. It's coming out really soon. It's with Jeff Godfrey, who I love. He's like another brother of mine. And it is going to be profound. Now, trust me, he did it with myself and a few others within the GC team. It'll rock and roll your life and really help you get some clarity and cleaning out your closets, for sure. It's a completely different perception. So stay tuned for that. We've got so much more stuff. We also have another really awesome healer coming in who's going to be assisting people with things like super soldiering and mylabbing and possessions. And very difficult attachments. So stay tuned for that. That's coming also. So thanks again. Hope you guys have a great weekend. Take care.